again, speaking of powerful women, there's another podcast question I'd love to ask you, which is, if the world was ending.
We just talked about Kimberly Locke, and you're like, speaking of powerful women.
Speaking of powerhouses in culture. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask whose fault is it that you're gay. I'm Eric Williams, and holy shit, this week has been fucking nuts, in a good way. There's like a lot of good things happening, but hoo-wee, has it been overwhelming? And it has definitely confirmed that the Zoloft is not working. My anxiety has been through the roof, but the good news is I have an appointment this week and we're definitely going to switch things up, so stay tuned. And also, thank you for all your nice messages. It really, really means a lot that you have ideas of things to try next and your personal experience, and I really do appreciate it, and I'm optimistic that something will fucking work. Fingers crossed. But part of the excitement is that my twin brother had his baby this week. He and his wife are already such good parents. The baby is gorgeous, and I'm so, so happy for them. And the other exciting thing is, besides having Danny Pellegrino, who, if you don't know, has literally one of the most popular podcasts ever, not only is he a guest on this week, but that's right, the Patreon is live. I've been working on it for a long time, and it is so exciting to see how many people have already subscribed. If you haven't yet, I really, really suggest you take a look. I put that link in the show notes and also, of course, on the Instagram. But the perks are really great. It's bonus episodes. It's early access to merch. It's going to be extended episodes. We actually have an extended Danny Pellegrino clip that I only included for the Patreon that is some really good lightning round questions. So make sure you subscribe. That perk is a gift for the premiere. So any level you sign up for, you get that bonus Danny Pellegrino content. And I also have video episodes up too. So the entire video that's going to be unedited. Danny's is up there already now. So I really so appreciate your support, and I really didn't know if anyone was going to listen to this, and the fact that you do is incredible. And of course, it really is an expensive venture and incredibly time consuming, and I love it. But this Patreon will absolutely ensure that I can continue to make this and interview more incredible people. Now, this week on the podcast, we have Danny Pellegrino, yes, the host of Everything Iconic, which is, of course, an iconic podcast. He has interviewed people that you would not believe, like Cameron Diaz, Elizabeth Olsen, Every Single Housewife, Andy Cohen, I mean, Rosie O'Donnell. He also has co-authored a book called Fancy AF Cocktails with our good friends Tom Sandoval and Ariana Maddox from Vanderpump Rules. And he has another book that's going to come out in March of this coming year. So look out for Danny's book in March. He really ended up being a perfect guest. I was, again, a little nervous with Danny because he is one of my dream people, and from the jump, he is not only such a professional, but clearly like a perfect guest. So one of my favorite episodes of all time. Make sure you give us a subscribe and a review, and again, that Patreon is in the show notes. You're going to want to stick around to the end of this episode because he reveals a something he's heard about Ricky Martin in terms of a fetish moment. And who among us doesn't want to picture Ricky Martin in any and every way sexually? Thanks for being here. Thanks for being queer. And here's Danny Pellegrino. Listen up, Danny Pellegrino. I am not feeling like today is a normal day, because it's not. It is not every day that Danny Pellegrino is on That's the Gayest Podcast. And like, yeah, this podcast may be gay as hell, but today everything is truly iconic. And thank you for coming on. I really mean that.
Eric, thank you. I'm so excited to meet you. I mean, oh, we're over Zoom, but I'm super excited to chat and have a little gay old time.
Yes. Exactly, a gay old time. I mean, I have to say that I feel like I saw you recently, even though I didn't, but I was at the Watch What Happens live show in your audience watching you kill it.
Right, and you emailed me, and I was like so worried, because after the whole thing ended, we were virtual on that, And every time that we went to commercial, I would like grab my little powder and I'd powder myself. And then I realized like, oh, I think the audience can see me doing that.
It's so weird what the audience experience is, because at one point, and don't worry, nothing was said that was, it was just before the show, you would hear on the speakers, I could hear like you talking to the other guests a little bit. You couldn't really make out words, but I was like, why are they piping in their like pre-show hang kind of to the audience and then maybe playing music? But your makeup moment was just really humanizing and okay. Honestly glamorous and gorgeous.
Well, you know, you gotta have a little powder on, because every time I see myself on these things, I'm like, oh, I'm so shiny. I'm Italian, I got oily skin. And by the way,
listen,
us talking, I feel like beforehand, because Ben and Ronnie and Sasha and I are all friends, they were also on that episode, and so beforehand I'm glad no one could hear, because we were like talking about Erica Jane and like just going into like all of the Bravo stuff.
Truly uncensored.
Yeah, uncensored. Unfiltered.
I mean, I kept turning to my friend watching the taping. And I was like, this is, they are so good at this. And I would be freaking out. I feel like you're obviously a pro at this point, but like, I don't know. And you're just like, all right, you're about to be on television in about 4 seconds. I'm like, yeah, I would be dabbing my forehead too. I would, do you still feel nervous when you do watch What Happens, or is it kind of like, eh?
I think like it's been better because it's been virtual. So I think there's not as much pressure or anything because you're at home, you're in your comfort zone. I only did it once. I was a bartender when I was like at the thing before the shutdown and before COVID really took over the world. So I got to be there once, but I wasn't like a main guest or anything. And so I think at home, there's much less pressure and it's not as stressful, but I still get a little nervous. And I really like Andy. I know people feel sort of different ways about Andy, but he's always been so incredibly nice to me. And I always just want to like impress him. And it's like, I want to make Andy laugh. It's like, if I could get Andy to laugh.
Oh yeah. It's like Daddy Andy. It's like when you get RuPaul to laugh on Drag Race, it's like, that's the golden ticket.
Right. Right.
But I think I do like Andy as well. I think he's like such a big personality and also so successful. Yeah, there's going to be some people that think he's a dick, but he I'm sure is a good person that just likes to flirt with a twink every now and again. And who are we to blame him for that?
Among us. No, I think it's interesting. I was just talking to a friend about gay representation, and we were saying it's like when there is so few prominent gay people in media or pop culture, I think we sort of expect the ones that we do have to check sort of every box, and that's hard. And you know, we were talking about that show Looking. Do you remember that show?
Yes,
on HBO. Yes. which I really enjoyed, and it wasn't perfect, and but it almost felt like it was impossible that it would represent everyone, and so of course people were critical. And I think that's largely just because there are so few shows that feature a mostly gay cast. And so it sucks.
I agree. I do think that also a point some guests have made too is that sometimes in the gay community, especially when you see someone else doing the thing, and when you are growing up, you think you're the only person with that experience. And so seeing someone else do it, it's like, well, that's not my experience. And then you subconsciously maybe either criticize or tear down just because it is not your experience and there hasn't been that representation that we're used to.
Right. Right.
But you're right. Like, everyone is a different person.
And look, no one's perfect. So there's always going to be stuff that we could complain about. And who are we to judge? We're all here to judge. That's the point of everything, really. But I do think, yeah. And specifically, I think about as a kid, I grew up in Ohio, and just even having someone like Andy or Anderson Cooper, who are gay dads, be prominent and post publicly with their kids and stuff like that, to me, just is so important and so great. But I understand they're not perfect, and I get that too. I know people are probably listening and rolling their eyes, like, you know, I get it. But
well, I do think the Anderson Cooper of it all is probably, I think before I was a pretty full stan, I did change next to him at a locker room gym, which kind of really put me in a different level of appreciation. But I think...
Oh, wait, you mean you appreciated him more?
Oh, yeah. Well, wait, what's the interesting?
I mean, I don't know. I never thought.
Well, let me tell you what the change happened. My change was when the Kathy Griffin stuff went down.
Oh, right.
That I think that started to feel like, wait a minute, what's the right side here?
Totally. And I felt, you know, the Kathy Griffin of it all too, she was my entry point into Bravo. Like, I loved, my life on the D-list was everything to me, and her stand-up specials, I think, were just brilliant. And I always say, I think that's one of the things that Bravo is missing right now, is you know, she had a stand-up special on once a quarter or something. You know, she was doing them all the time. And I feel like there's not much of a comedic presence on Bravo. And I wish, not taking me out of it, it's like I wish they would do stand-up specials like that that were based around pop culture, similar to what Kathy did, obviously, in whatever comic's own way. But taking someone like Amy Phillips or even Casey and Danielle, like they do live shows, filming one of those and putting it on, I think... or Ben and Ronnie from Watch What Crappens. It's like they're doing live shows already. I would love to see them support more comedians on the network. Because, yeah, I love the Kathy Griffin of it all.
I think people would eat that up if they saw a comedian that was like really speaking to the Bravo audience. And honestly, like not only Bravo, but I feel like Netflix could even get in on the Bravo of it all with comedians. And I think that what's probably happening is that they're so used to the cash cow that is All the Housewives and the Married to Medicine and the, that style of show that they're probably afraid to take those types of risks when, come on now, we need Ben and Ronnie on that television. We need a Danny Pellegrino. We need an Amy Phillips.
I love Ben and Ronnie. And yeah, I think... to me, it seems sometimes like they don't invest. Here I am just like talking. We got on here and I'm like talking all this shit about Bravo. But I think they don't invest a lot. To me, at least, it doesn't seem like they invest a lot in talent outside of the reality TV talent.
Definitely. Which is, it's interesting to me because, like, Andy is such a champion, I feel like, of so many performers and artists. But you know what? Maybe it's just like in this chapter, they're not. And the next, tomorrow, you're going to get a call about some show that you're going to host.
Oh, my God. I you're sweet. But I also think, yeah, going back to sort of the Andy of it all, I do think people think he makes like all the decisions there and he doesn't. Early on, I think he made more decisions than he makes now. But he's always been really lovely to me is the roundabout way of what we were talking.
It is. And I want to also put a pin on the loveliness of Andy because he did an Instagram live with me and Matt and it was actually like the loveliest chat. And he was, you know, genuinely interested and like, I would love to have a dinner with Andy, and why don't we throw an SJP, and come on.
You can Kelly Ripa, let's get the whole gang up there. But, you know, at Watch What Happens Live, the one time that I was there in person, I noticed how everyone was sort of behind the scenes, and you know, I was like really like putting on my monocle trying to figure everyone out, and I think that's the easiest way to tell like what a workplace environment is like and how they feel about the sort of head honcho or whatever, and it seemed like they really loved him. And I've been to other talk shows just like behind the scenes and stuff. And you can tell there's a different kind of vibe. But at Watch What Happens Live, it seemed like everyone genuinely really loved him. And the other people in charge there all seemed to be having a really good time and like nice and all of that.
I love to hear that. I mean, honestly, when I was there, I like even just the people that are wrangling the audience are really, really fun and just like know what the gig is. And it's just to get these Bravo obsessies screaming and clapping for just a little too long. It's like a little bit of an awkward clap length. But I actually in a different life was... It won't make any sense out of context, but I'll give you the 3-second elevator pitch. I did Elf the Musical. I played Buddy the Elf in the musical Elf, and I was promoting it on Wendy Williams. And at backstage of Wendy Williams, it was my first time ever being at something like that. And I really feel like people loved Wendy. I like it. It made me feel like so. And Todrick Hall was on the show that day also, and he like I'm sure is. Truly perfectly lovely, but like he had such an entourage and like I don't think I got within like 50 feet of him, but overall it was quite a dream. And Wendy, even like during commercial breaks, whatever it was like giving me asides, talking about my lace front wig.
It was... I love that. Wendy, I think it does way better than people give her credit for, because it's like to just sit in front of the camera and talk for 30 minutes every single day, I think is much harder than people even realize.
Did you see that clip recently of Wendy sitting and she was talking about someone, and I will butcher it, but it was a like very popular person that she was talking about their social media and then she revealed they died?
I mean, it's a roller coaster ride every time she's speaking. It's like, what's going on?
Well, listen, so I want to tell you that I was listening to Everything Iconic, all of this morning, yesterday's episode, and I, as always, are all good, but I'm so curious, so sorry about this construction that's happening. I just want to tell any listener here who has not listened yet to this recent episode of Everything Iconic, you must, but Danny, the reveal that your closet has not only a rosy denim jacket, not only... a Kathy Hilton wig. Not only, I mean, you were giving me
I have like a whole wig collection in my closet. And by the way, like I'm looking at myself on the Zoom here and I'm wearing a ridiculous outfit because I literally had to grab clothes because they're doing construction now in the room in the closet. So like I don't have my normal clothes. I had to like throw on a hat because I couldn't even get to my bathroom to like, you know, fix myself up. I couldn't do my powder. My whole routine.
Danny.
So I feel like I'm wearing a ridiculous outfit, but that's besides the point. But yeah, I went in my closet. There's been construction here forever. Somebody could come in and out at any time. But they are renovating the unit above me. And so, yeah, it's hard because I record my show 2 days a week. And so the most recent episode, I had to like hide in the corner. And also I feel like I'm just every single episode I'm getting on there being like, sorry if you hear banging, but like, I don't know what to do. I don't have a studio. Like I'm not Wendy Williams.
But see, I actually like in the podcast world, I actually find it when I'm listening to stuff like that, really, it actually makes you feel closer to the host. And as I'm hosting this one, I really, when I first started, which was Danny 5 months ago, but like I'm even learning in these 5 months of, it is okay to, let's say you don't know a fact about something and you're honest about that. Oh, there's banging in my fucking apartment. It's like, I used to want to try to edit out or delete anything that would be considered an imperfection. But like, people are people are people. And just like we said, gay people are people. All people are people, Danny.
People are people. And that is, you're right. It is part of the appeal. I think it's the makeshiftness of it.
Yeah. And I also, yeah. I think like it's so interesting when you are giving opinions and you talk about how people kind of clap back, and obviously they are entitled to do that. But I do, I actually did write down that you were talking about Erica's running mascara and you're like, what are we, Lauren Conrad on the Hills? What's happening? So I am going to agree that the performance of it all is what is really taking me out of the Erica Jane. Is that she, do I think that she is more innocent than guilty? Yeah, and I know it's all alleged things, but I think it's the way that she is performative. It's like, well,
it's all the like hand movements and the she said this most recent episode like a few different times, like, I'm not going to be okay. I'm not going to be okay. And then there's such a disconnect between the Erica we're seeing on social media, who's like this boss, who's like not going to, you know, hashtag girl boss, and like everyone's coming after her and all that stuff. And so it does feel weird watching it. And then the other thing I was even just thinking about today of like, well, if this whole thing is happening, I can't imagine any person would be advising her to be doing the show right now. And she's like really doing the show. Like she's, yes. Any other housewife would have stepped back, or they would have barely kind of filmed, you know, we would have all been complaining. Like we're not seeing any of it. Like what's going on. But in this situation, I feel like she's there every scene telling us how bad everything is. And it's like that makes me question it too in a weird way.
It does. And also I think that before the season aired, when people were asking Andy, does Erica actually go into it? He's like, you're going to be surprised how much she does. But then we're all watching it like, I think we're surprised as to like how she's going into it. And actually Matt and I were also talking about, who is letting her do this show right now? I mean, the fact that she says, I'll do anything except confess, go to confession. It's like, well, let's not use the word confession when you're in the middle of a very high-profile criminal
case. It's shocking. Eric, I don't understand. Like, and we're seeing her goods, and she's talking about her wares. And even the fact of, like, getting rid of stuff, it just seems like, why would you be on a TV show doing that? Like, I don't – none of it really adds up to me. And I'm not an expert. You know, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know if I can know. But
is it because of the paycheck that she just needs the money?
I guess I don't know.
It
I
might
know.
Be. I think that also.
I mean, it could be also controlling the narrative. Like, I think in some way, I do believe that she thinks she's controlling the narrative this way. But I don't think what these housewives never realize, not with Erica Jane, but like with all of them, is the job of the producers is to create a good show that keeps you coming back week to week. So no matter who you are, they're going to portray you in a good light, and then they're going to portray you in a bad light, because they want the audience at home to question how they feel about the situation. So if Erica was even 100% innocent, they would never edit her 100% innocent, because they're putting on a show.
It's storytelling, babe.
It's storytelling. So it's like all these housewives, I think they go into these shows thinking they have control of the narrative, and never. I think there's so many times where there's housewives who come across as way more villainous on the show than they are in real life. And then on the flip side, I think there's ones who come across as angels who aren't in real life, but they want to keep the audience questioning and going on that roller coaster. Because if you feel one way about someone the whole season, then they're going to be gone next season because they're not interesting characters. And it's, that's not what the show is. And yeah, so the Erica Jane thing too, I feel like sometimes I'm thinking, like, last night, I know a lot of her fans, I had posted something like on Twitter about how that car crash story made no fucking sense. And some of her fans were coming to me and saying, like, you know, yes, it did, or this or that. And I'm like, no, they purposely didn't make it make sense. Like, even Erica should be watching that and going, yeah, they edited me to not make any fucking sense, because that's what their job is.
I was thinking the exact same thing of, like, this edit of the story was trying to, like, literally make us go on that weird ramp the car was going on. It's like, wait, what direction? Okay, then he's cheating, but wait, then he's unconscious, but he also called you. It's, yeah, I think on purpose, like you're saying, the editors are putting a seed of doubt so that we can, I mean, hopefully find out that she actually is innocent and this is all real.
That's what we all want, right?
Oy vey, I really hope so, because...
But I always think, like, those fans and Erica, they should all be upset with the show, not the fans, for saying she's bullshitting us or it's a lie or it's performative or whatever. It's like, they should look at the edit.
Look at the edit. Look at what does I Love New York say? Look at the... He's like, look at the garment.
Why can't we get I Love New York? Why can't we get Tiffany Pollard on Housewives?
Oh my, wait, which... Okay, where does she live?
Well, she did, like, this thing with Sonia once. I don't know if she lives in New York or what, but she did do some filming thing with Sonia from New York. And so in my head, like, that's where she should be. And her name is New York.
I mean, truly. And I literally had the vision of Tiffany walking into a room with Sonia, Ebony, Luann, Ramona. I mean, she would tear Ramona up. That would be... Remember Celebrity Deathmatch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, I would like to see a Celebrity Deathmatch version either... IRL or claymation version of Ramona and Tiffany fighting.
I would love that, Eric.
Mouths to whose ears?
Wendy Williams.
And that is correct. So speaking of our gorgeous women on Bravo, I also want to mention Luann saying, like you recapped, how I've been in trouble for a lot worse when...
What?
Sonia has just punched some glass on a random hotel wall. Girly, you've done worse.
Right. She's done worse. And by the way, like, Sonia knocking that glass was very accidental. Yes, she was sort of like flailing about as if her arms were independent from her body, but she still accidentally hit the thing. Whereas Luann was, like, drunk, went into someone's room and then refused to go out of it and then got arrested and then assaulted the police officer.
Right.
And it's so, like, it's different.
Yeah, those were human beings that you were actually lashing out at, and not just a little cup of glass pieces in Salem.
That's the best part of Luann, though. Like, to me, like, that's what I want from Luann. Like, I want the delusion and the not being able to see it all clearly.
That's true. We love her for the unself-awareness at times. And, I mean, I think the most pristine image of that is when Luann walked outside of that random theater and saw her poster for her show and just went, what did she just, like, took a big breath and she's like, wow. I'm like, you're standing by yourself fully narrating your experience.
Truly the best thing ever. That Miami trip, I mean... I can't even think about these old seasons of Roni because I compare them to this one and it's so hard, Eric.
It's really, Danny, sad. I agree. And I want to tell you, I last week had Carrie O'Donnell on. We were talking about how it's like watching a friend be sick. It's like...
Oh, totally. Totally.
It's just a little tough to witness.
Yeah. And like, it's always been my absolute favorite show on TV. And it's just, even I'm not... And, you know, like, I'll watch it, but the past few weeks, I feel like I'm zoning out so much more. And that used to happen when I would watch Orange County, especially because I'm taking notes as I'm usually watching these. And that used to happen. Orange County, I would just sort of, like, zone out. And I'm like, I have nothing to talk about with this episode because it's boring. Yeah. And that's how I'm feeling with Roni lately, is, like, I don't even know what to say about it.
Well, it feels like, what year are we in? Like, 2014, when Beverly Hills is amazing and New York is not as good? It's like, I mean, New York has always been good, but Beverly Hills is just at least giving us the most, and I think we'd be lost without them right now.
I really feel like we were talking about housewives who are more villainous or whatever. I think Dorinda was portrayed more villainously than she really is last season. And I'm not saying she didn't have a bad season. She had a terrible season. She got angry. She said one thing that I think was, like, totally below the belt about Tinsley and the turkey baster.
Yeah.
To me, if she didn't say that, or if she would have just actually owned up to that and sincerely apologized, I think Dorinda would have been back. But really, when you think about it, it feels like it was one or two moments of Dorinda crossing the line that
they really
did
amplified
her in, that were amplified. And I understand, again, I'm not saying she was some angel. She was definitely like more angrier than usual, but I don't think they should have gotten rid of her.
Oh, I agree. God, I mean, clearly we're seeing the ramifications of a Dorinda-less Roni. But speaking of kind of really strong characters that we love, we think Kathy Hilton, first of all, we're grateful, but would we want her as a full-timer?
No, I don't want her. I want her just how she is. Like, I want her to be at every group event. I want her to be cooking with Kyle.
Asking about Hunky Dory.
Yeah, because sometimes I feel that way with Marlo, too. Like, I don't really think it's a good idea, you know, with Marlo to get a full-time Peach. It's like, they get to be there just as much as the other women, but then we don't grow tired of them. You know, we don't need the fam. Although I would like to know more about Kathy's like home life and family life.
Oh, me too. Like, clearly she does not know how to do a darn thing on her own. And like, so I want to see the people helping her. And yeah, honestly, I'm sure she treats them very well. Hopefully.
Yeah. I mean, I even just that one scene of at her house when like Erica and Crystal went to play tennis, and I wanted to know more about like Kathy's china and like her decorations, and she brought that fucking candle this past week. I'm like, I just want to know like where Kathy shops and like all of those things.
Do you think Paris will make an appearance this season?
I hope so. I want the whole Hilton group, and I want Kim, I want Kyle, I want Kathy, I want Paris and Nikki. Rick, what's the son's? Don't they have a son? They've got
do
a son.
They?
Yeah, they have a boy. I can't think of his. I think they do. I'm pretty sure they do.
I'm sure they do. I mean, listen, where there's a Hilton, there's a way. I do want to pivot to the podcast question, Danny Pellegrino, which is, let's go into it. Who do you blame for making you gay? Whose fault is it, Danny Pellegrino?
I've been really thinking about this over the past couple of days, and there are so many things I think we could point to in pop culture, so many moments where, for me, I really nailed it down to around 1997. Now, I would have been 11, 12 around that time, and that's when I really noticed a lot of the pop culture. I remember seeing I Know What You Did Last Summer and ogling Ryan Phillippe and Freddie Prinze Jr. And but there was one really obscure moment that I wanted to share with you that I don't know if anyone will remember this, but Cuba Gooding Jr. was hosting SNL, and it had to have been, I think it was right after Jerry Maguire. Maybe it was like after his next movie after Jerry Maguire. Unclear. But he was hosting, and I had used to tape it back then. Like, I would put my VHS tape in and try to tape it. You know, I didn't have every week, but I taped some. And I had taped an episode that he hosted, and he did a sketch with Mango. I think the musical guest
Chris
was like
Kattan.
Ricky Martin. Yeah. I think the musical guest was Ricky Martin.
Mm.
So it was like a really gay episode. And in the Mango sketch, Cuba Gooding Jr. is like, he's in pajamas, and then he takes off his blouse, and he's just wearing these like boxer shorts, and he's like seducing Mango or dancing for Mango, and he sort of like lowers his shorts so you see like butt cheek or butt side or whatever, or it was some sort of something that you saw his underwear, and I think he flashed a butt. And I remember it was just so important to me I had taped it, and then when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, you know how you go through all those feelings. And I had it on tape, and I remember it was like barely a flash of skin, but it was so important to me.
Would you rewatch it, or was very formative time? 11 or 12 is like, it's really intense. And I think this answer, Danny, is so, so good because it's so specific. It also catapults me back to that era where Night of the Roxbury is coming out, where Chris Kattan is playing this Mango. There's like that Will Ferrell sketch where they're all associates in like a clothing store, and Will Ferrell's in
the tiny cell phone.
Yes. It's all so important. And I also find it so interesting that Ricky Martin was the musical guest on that episode. And how full circle is that?
I mean, Ricky Martin was everything at that time, too. I remember seeing his first music video with the candle wax. That was so. And around that era, too, MTV was very important to me because they would do all the summer coverage and the spring break coverage. And I remember constantly we're having like fashion shows where it'd be like NSYNC performing, and then people in like whipped cream bikinis walking around. And it was like seeing all of that just as a 11-year-old closeted kid was a lot. And I also loved Tony Danza and Who's the Boss, but that's...
Oh, that's a good one, too. Tony Danza, funny story, is that I, in another life, was a tour guide in New York City, and I would give tours of Little Italy, and Tony Danza bought a cheese shop that we would always go to, and so I saw him multiple times, and do you want to know what it was like if it wasn't all positive, or do you want me to not talk about it?
No, you can tell me. I don't have much of an emotional connection to Tony Danza, okay. But just I do physical. Have a physical. Yeah.
Well... He would like yell at people to get out. He would yell at tourists to get out of the way. And he, I don't think, knew what he signed up for. And so that's really, I don't have any better tea than that. But it was just like, get out of Tony Danza's way is what you learned. And that I did, Danny, that I did. Wow. But well, I was going to ask, so spring break of it all. I have to say, maybe a controversial take, but while it really awoke some gay feelings, very much so. There were so many chiseled, gorgeous bodies. It was so sexually charged. I think that show gave me body dysmorphia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. The casting calls were like, hey, can you be a hairless linebacker that has broad shoulders, giant pecs, and again, no hair, please. And I'm like looking down at like the hair going on my leg at 12 years old, just being like, oh, that's not good.
I felt the same way. I mean, I think that that whole era was so defined too by like Abercrombie and Fitch. And
yes.
I was an overweight kid and I have a lot of hair too. And I remember like every time you'd go shopping, it's like, I didn't look like the guys on that bag, like who the hairless, muscular.
Danny, I would collect bags. I would literally collect bags. Yeah, if I could have framed a bag, I would have.
Yeah, it was hard. I remember they would have the magazine, like the quarterly or whatever. And I remember trying to like sneak by it or convince my mom to get in it. They had like an R rating on it, or they were covering it up, and it made you want it even more. And
whoa, yeah. Danny, you're really catapulting me back there. I just like going to see these magazines that are wrapped in plastic. And my I really have not thought about this in so long. My dad owns a pharmacy, and I would work there as a young person, and he had a magazine aisle, and at one point in history he did have wrapped maybe Penthouse, maybe something. But I would go to the Cosmopolitan and I would read the sex tips, and I would like, and then they would always have a hot guy of the month or something like that, uh-huh. or of the week. And I would pore over these in the aisle, and like a random employee would walk by and I would hide it in like a Sports Illustrated. And right. then at Borders or Barnes and Noble, they also had the gay mm-hmm. porn mags, I guess, that were wrapped in plastic. And I would just like slyly walk by. Of course, you would go into the gay and lesbian aisle of the books and just like, oh, I'm kind of lost. Why am I here for 15 minutes? Uh-huh. I mean,
I used to do that too. I was just, I was writing an essay about this exact thing about like, I would get the USA Today and I would put the gay magazines under it and then go to the cafe to read them and sneak read them. Yeah.
USA Today is an ally, a true ally.
Yeah.
That's so brilliant. Do you think if you had to choose between Cuba Gooding Jr. and Ricky Martin, if both of them wanted to sleep with you right now, who would you choose?
That would be a tough... I'd have to go with Ricky Martin, because now that I know he's gay, I feel like he'd be much better at the sex.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. I really hope Ricky Martin is as happy with his partner, and I hope they seem to be great, and I just think he is... Wow, what a gay legend.
Do you ever say... Have you heard the thing about how he's really into feet?
No.
I think it's like, I don't know if he said it in an interview or if it's like an urban legend or something. I could, you know, somebody will have to fact check it. But I had heard somewhere that he's into feet. And so now whenever I see him posting online like a feet thing, I'm always think like it makes me look at it differently. You know what I mean? I'm like analyzing it. And
I mean, yeah. Listen, this is how much I believe in you. I'm like, yeah, it's true. He's into feet.
Yeah. Like I could have heard it in a dream. Like I don't even know that I heard it in reality, but I believe it to be true now. And every time I look at a post he does, I'm like noticing how prominent the feet are displayed.
It's just a zoomed in version of a foot. I mean, I think I have no choice.
I think he posted, Eric. I think there is like a recent post. Maybe that's why I was like thinking about it.
Wait.
Look, you keep talking. I'm looking.
Well, what I was going to say is I think we have no choice but to title this episode Ricky Martin Loves Feet. And then I think the SEO will really kind of get boosted.
I hope I'm not wrong. I don't see it right now.
Like, listen, if you're wrong about Ricky Martin liking feet, there are worse things to be wrong about.
I'm sorry, Ricky, if I got this wrong. But you know what? He's a beautiful man is the real point of that
beautiful
story.
Man and Ricky Martin, a loyal listener of That's the Gayest Podcast. I want to thank you, Ricky Martin, for listening again. And we're sorry if you don't like feet. I do want to say that we have so many listeners that are obsessed with Danny Pellegrino, and one of my favorite listeners, Sam Mehorter, she wanted me to ask you a question. Well, a few questions she gave me, and one of them, speaking of pop culture, moments that we love so much. Ashley Simpson. No one's
love
better.
Her.
Do you have a favorite Ashley Simpson song?
Yeah, I love all of them, obviously. I'd say, like, my favorite sort of obscure Ashley track is the duet she did with Jessica of Little Drummer Boy, because it's truly insane.
Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
The pa-rum-pa-pum-pums in that song are godly and also very unholy. I mean, they're just, it's wild. The range of that song is just incredibly wild. Her singing about how she's a poor boy, too. Like, Ashley Simpson with the dark hair.
Poor boy!
With the dark hair, singing about how she's a poor boy, too. Like, I don't know better music.
I don't either, and I think that the Grammy silence is deafening for that duet of pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
100%. But I also, I mean, obviously I love Pieces of Me and La La and Boyfriend and L-O-V-E. Like, there's so many.
Boyfriend, I do love these. Do you? Has anyone been like, Danny, can you, what do you think Ashley Simpson sounds like in Pieces of Me? Can you do an impersonation?
Pieces, pieces, pieces of May. May. It's like May.
Yeah, why aren't people doing that? It's got to be May. Why aren't they doing the
also,
pieces
wasn't
of May?
The, remember her TV show, the Ashley Simpson show? It was like the end of the opening credits. It was the song Autobiography, I think, was the theme song. And she's like, if you want my auto, want my autobiography, just ask May.
May.
Yeah. Like, drags on for like 10 full minutes.
And she gives you 11 syllables in that one me.
Oh,
just ask May.
Gosh, the gifts that she gives us, they really do not end.
And we joke too about her music, but like those later albums too are like really, really artfully wonderful.
I still listen to Autobiography. I have a music on my phone that I, if I'm like taking a subway ride, I go on shuffle, and when Ashley Simpson's Autobiography pops up, I say yes,
best
thank
day.
You when
yeah.
Clay Aiken pops up, I say absolutely this right. When Jordan
this
Sparks,
is the night.
This is the night.
This is the day.
Although
I'm going to listen to This is the Night. I hate that you just brought up that album because I loved it too.
Danny, how could you not? It gave you no choice. It gave you no choice.
What was his song besides This is the Night? Wasn't there Invisible or something?
Yeah, of course Invisible. Of course. Danny, I could literally word for word tell you the lyrics of Invisible. I could also tell you that somewhere in the world
can
there's
like... Can you tell me... Like the, can you like name a lyric from Invisible? Can you just
okay.
like, I need to remember what the song was. I'm sorry to like interrupt you.
No, please. If we're going to be interrupted about Clay Aiken, that like, why, how, like, that's a gift. So I know the chorus and I'm going to just, okay, because the chorus is like, oh, I got it. Okay, so it starts on a gorgeous ooh.
Ooh,
and then he goes into oh, and also like think about like a game and think of this.
What you doing tonight? I wish I could be a fly on your wall. Are you really alone? Quit stealing dreams. What can I bring you into my life?
Wait, doesn't he talk about a girl this at some point?
Was invisible.
Yeah, and I could just watch you in your room. Scary.
You do a great Clay.
Thank you so much, Danny. You know what? One of my the funniest Clay Aiken songs is he's like, I'm not going to remember the title or the lyrics at this point, but he talks about like loving a girl. And
sure.
I do not want to like continue gay stereotypes and tropes that are damaging to our people. But in this moment, I have to. He like has a sibling S that is just so beautifully comedic. And he's like, this girl he loves so much, and it's just like a perfect sibilance. And I think listening to it, I was like, even Claus, I was like, question mark. But I think
I need to go. I'm gonna go listen back to that album. I need to renew my Claymate card.
Wait, Claymate card?
Weren't his fans called the Claymates?
You know
Am
what?
I making that up.
I hope they were, because I don't know what they call themselves, but I guess I consider myself a Claymate.
You know what? We're Claymates now. I'm not sure if that was it, but we're
Claymates for L.
We're
Danny.
Claymates.
Wow. What a throwback.
I do really. I mean, I loved Clay, but I was more team Kimberly Locke that season. You know,
I
love Kimberly Locke.
She had a really good song that unfortunately
Eighth World Wonder.
Yes. Oh, Eighth World Wonder.
A
it's
classic.
So good. Yeah.
You know, want to know a funny little tip? My Please. Podcast theme song is sung by Kimberly Locke. And no one, I play it a little bit at the beginning, but it's mostly just instrumental. And at the if you listen through the end, that's Kimberly. And then at the end, I play like a little bit longer, but it's sort of like an inspirational religious ballad. And I very early on in my show, it was like an independently done song that she did. And I invited her on my show. Mm-hmm. And to me, it like reminded me of a 90s talk show. Like it was so cheesy and wonderful. So I asked her if I could use it as my theme song. And so whenever I get new listeners, if they listen to the end through the end of the show, which I know most people turn it off like right before that song comes on, but or earlier, but you can hear it and it makes me laugh because new listeners, they'll be like, what the fuck was that song? And like, it's hard to explain to people. Like, I thought it was funny.
I mean, listen, if you were to say, Eric, who do you think sings the Everything Iconic theme song? My last guess would have been Kimberly Locke from American Idol season 8, 3.
No, she was early. I think she was like 3.
Okay, she was 3. Yeah, I mean, God, that's such good insider information because I literally was listening to you today and being like, this theme song, because I fantasized about the Gay Ass Podcast. Like, I think it's just going to be one long season until the end of eternity, but like, if they're like, okay, for this 50th episode, maybe I'll just do an instrumental from a Clay Aiken song.
Oh my God, please do that. Yeah.
I'll let you know when
you gotta make yourself enjoy it. It's like, I know people think, what the fuck is this song? But it makes me laugh. And then every once in a while, people will like tweet at her about it. And I don't think she realized like that anyone listens to my show when she agreed to allow.
She was like missing out like millions of dollars in royalties. Oh, man. Oh, bless you, Kimberly. Well, honestly, like, bless all. I think those American Idol women maybe made me gay. Like, Fantasia Barrino was such a big part of my growing up. And I think the first CDs I purchased as an independent 13-year-old man was Clay Aiken and Ruben Studdard, actually.
Yeah, what a time to be alive. I went to the tour one. I don't remember which one it was. I think it was the Jordan Sparks season, actually. Mm. And she wasn't even there that night. Like, it was like, she was the big winner. And it was like, we just had to watch these other randos. But I was so obsessed with American Idol back then. Like, through season, whenever Paula and Simon left, that's when I sort of gave up. And then I watched it with Mariah. I watched that season. But God bless those seasons before then with Randy, Paula, Simon.
Those were the golden years. And I will say that I got made fun of because I watched one of Katy Perry's first years. I think Jennifer Lopez had a couple of years on there that I actually really enjoyed. I just watched J-Lo and just think that like she's so perfect. Do you like the movie Hustlers?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Like everything I see J-Lo and I'm just like, God, she's my everything. But again, speaking of powerful women, there's another podcast question I'd love to ask you, which is, if the world was ending.
We just talked about Kimberly Locke and you're like, speaking of powerful women.
Speaking of powerhouses in culture. Kimberly lives in a 2-bedroom in Encino.
Speaking of legends in the entertainment industry.
I need to do a legends ball, but it's only the most like, I mean, listen, I don't want to be mean to the Kimberly Locke because she deserves only goodness, but I want it to be people that you haven't listened to or thought about for a while.
That legends ball I watch once a year on YouTube.
Yeah,
legends ball, nothing better.
Did you read that the Kennedy Center Honors is coming out and Bette Midler is one of the people they're honoring?
I
tweeted that I like $20 that the Bette Midler performs her own tribute. Like, I don't think anyone else can do it except for her.
You're right. I mean, she's a singular talent.
Singular talent. And gosh, so actually the question is, if the world was ending and you could only save one character actress, who would it be?
Oh, goodness. This is a tough question. You know, I love a good character actress. Mm-hmm. I always think Alfre Woodard is wildly underrated, but I'm going to go with Judy Greer because I just love her. And I feel like the best is yet to come with Judy Greer. I feel like she's got some good solid lead roles ahead of her that I believe.
Really pray for that. And you know, full circle is that she is in one of my favorite J-Lo movies, which is The Wedding Planner.
Where J-Lo played Italian.
She played Italian. Yeah. I was like, oh, sure, 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 sure. I mean, listen, and honestly, like Matthew McConaughey, say what you will about him, but in that movie, he's so fucking hot.
So hot. But I love that movie, and so I hate to even say anything negative toward it. But I mean, we talked about male makeup, and he seems to be wearing a lot of makeup in that movie, or it's just the lighting or something, which again, not a knock because you're right, he looks stunning. But
I haven't clocked that, but I'm really excited to watch it again.
Rewatch it.
Wow, Matthew McConaughey's makeup job in the classic Wedding Planner.
Wait, I also just have to go off about this for a second, too, is How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I just rewatched it, and I'm shocked at what they did to Kate Hudson's hair in it, because it's very, like, dried out and fried, and it's, like, also the dye job they did is bizarre, and that movie's also very strangely lit. But if you rewatch it, it's like you can, there's certain shots of Kate Hudson. I'm like, she's stunning and she looks great anyway. But I'm like, was there not a comb on set? Did they have no brush? Like, what's going on?
Oh, I can't see. This is such a gift to rewatch these movies, because what inspired this entire podcast was a series I have that you actually beautifully shared one of my videos called That's a Gay Ass Movie, where I broke down why Drop Dead Gorgeous is gay. And I think that rewatching them now, it really reopens to why they affected you so much. And I had girls in my senior class that wore Kate Hudson's yellow dress from How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
I was obsessed with that. One more thing, if anyone out there goes to rewatch How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, I have to point out this one scene when they're all playing that game called Bullshit, the card game at the table outside of Matthew McConaughey's family's house. They're on like a deck or a porch. Matthew McConaughey's character's sister comes in, and she was apparently like a nurse, or she worked at a hospital, and she comes in with just this giant tray of ribs. And then she gives only her brother, her husband is at the table, but she gives only her brother, played by Matthew McConaughey, a kiss on the lips, throws down the ribs, and then no one acknowledges it. It's like the most.
She kisses him on his lips?
She kisses him like right on the lips and just throws down this like big ass tray of ribs and is like, oh, I just got off my shift. And it was like her husband, she just walks past or whatever.
Is and the no husband one, giving it's... like subtext, like backstory? Is he pissed that he wasn't given the ribs?
I mean, it was so strange to me. I rewound it a couple times, and I even texted I don't have sisters, so like, I don't know. And I am Italian, and like, Italian people like kiss, you know, like it's a thing. But I was like, do brother and sister like kiss on the lips that way? Like, I don't know.
I don't think it's too controversial to say no. I think that also like Jewish families as a Jew, like very much the kissing is like, yeah, it's like I kiss on the cheek all day, every day, every relative. Absolutely. Right. Not to my brothers. We don't kiss each other on the cheek, but I remember like.
And certainly not on the lips.
Well, yeah, we do the lips.
Matthew McConaughey and his sister, who was, by the way, I think casted by like central casting because she doesn't have any other lines.
You know what? She probably was a background actor and they bumped her up and they were like, yeah, you look like you have worked a long shift.
And they're like, just greet him. He's your brother. Just greet him. And she's like, you know what? This is my one shot to kiss Matthew McConaughey on the lips.
Yeah. You walk in and you greet him. And she's like, got it.
It was the only take that they gave her. And she's like, okay, I got this. And then now she tells all her friends, like, yeah, I was in a movie. I kissed Matthew McConaughey on the lips.
I had a kissing scene with Matthew McConaughey. Oh my God, you did? Although I would, if I were her, I would wish she would just like take him gingerly by the cheeks and go in just like a very soft sister kiss.
And in my head, they just like didn't have the budget to shoot it again because she's just like,
we gotta
to
move on, we're
out.
Behind schedule. And she's
so
like,
they just kept it in.
She's like, I think my kissing scene made it into the movie, I hope they don't cut it. And then she's watching in the theater.
We solved the mystery because I just watched it and I was like thinking, like, why is this happening? But now we made sense of it, so I feel better.
Well, and it turns out that woman was Kimberly Locke.
The eighth world wonder.
The eighth world wonder. Well, Danny Pellegrino, I could truly talk to you for about 20 more hours. But as we're nearing the end, I do want to ask you a question that you need to feel free to answer in a way that is true to you. Danny Pellegrino, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I love all of them, though, and I do just want to quickly say that one, a couple of them that are underappreciated are number one, Eddie, where she became the basketball coach of the Knicks, and number two, The Associate, where she became a businessman, and her assistant was played by Diane Wiest.
What? So. Every time I ask this question, I learn of a new movie I haven't watched of hers, and I'm devastated and elated at the same time. It's called The Associate?
The Associate. You have to go watch it. It's very... I mean, I don't know how it's aged because she does turn herself into a white man to become a businessman. So she is in white male prosthetics. But the whole point of the movie is that...
Wait, this is reverse white chicks. Or no, it's just white.
And also like B.B. Newworth is in it and like sort of like falls in love with like the male version of Whoopi.
Oh, that's a classic storyline.
It's like a very 96. And one of the guys from Wings is in it. But Diane, it's like basically like a buddy comedy between like Diane Wiest and Whoopi Goldberg. And it's just so insane. And I remember as a kid, just like I got the VHS and I would just watch it over and over again. And anyone I would try to show it to, they were like, what the fuck is this movie? And I'm like, it's so good though. And now I'm like, maybe it wasn't good. I haven't watched it in years, but I'm going to rewatch it tonight is what I'm trying to say.
Good. And we're going to find out if it aged well or not. And I'm excited to get that answer. Well, listen, Danny Pellegrino, thanks for coming on this podcast. It really, 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 it makes my week, day, month, year. And you are truly iconic.
Thank you, Eric. This was a pleasure. Hopefully we'll talk soon. And thank you, everyone.
Just a reminder, if you want more Danny Pellegrino, that Patreon link is in the show notes and on all my social media. We have extended episode with Danny there in addition to some other cool perks. So make sure you sign up if you haven't. And I'm so grateful to you and helping us grow this gay ass community. I also want to thank Danny Pellegrino for surpassing my high expectations. Follow him at Danny Pellegrino, P-E-L-L-E-G-R-I-N-O. And you can follow me at Eric Wills, W-I-L-L-Z, and at Gay Ass Podcast. That Patreon link is there as well. And please tell your friends if you like this episode. And we have another incredible guest coming up next week. So I'll see you then.
Hey, Kristen, how's it tracking?
With Carvana Value Tracker?
What else?
Oh, it's tracking. In fact, Value Surge Alert, trucks up 2.5%. Vans down 1.7%.
Just as predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So, we gonna...
I don't know. Could sell, could hold.
The power to always know our car's worth.
Exhilarating, isn't it?
Tracking.
Always know your car's worth with Carvana Value Tracker.